Okay, so the viewpoint I'm going to take on this topic is going to be to try and, okay, so there's been some people thinking recently about sort of what kind of constraints that you can get on, for example, holographic geometries if you start with constraints, like information theoretic constraints on entanglement, okay? And in the other direction, people have been thinking also about if we know that we have this RT formula for entanglement entropy, we can ask sort of what kind of constraints does that tell us about, give us on entanglement entropies that can arise in holographic theories, okay? And so I want to kind of think of doing this reconstruction of bulk surfaces in terms of what is the kind of minimal set of information, of sort of sorts of regions I need in order to be able to reconstruct all the different kinds of bulk surfaces. And then once I know this sort of minimal set, I can then basically reconstruct all other entanglement entropies from this and think of this as some constraint on entanglement entropy in holographic theories. I'm going to write more about this. I just want to sort of give people an idea of where I'm going here. So that's the general idea. And then what I'm going to be doing is looking at a particular sort of approach I'm going to suggest to doing this sort of reconstruction in holographic theories of bulk surfaces in higher dimensions than d equals 2, and trying to identify what is the sort of building blocks you need to be able to do that. Okay? So feel free to interrupt and ask questions along the way. So just a quick review that always goes at the beginning of these talks. So we know entanglement entropy in a quantum mechanical theory. Okay, it's a function of what subsystem we want to think about and what the state is, the density matrix. Okay, right, the formula is rho log rho, where rho A is this reduced density matrix, retraced out the other degrees of freedom in the system. Okay, so in holography, okay, we have this other formula, this sort of RT formula we can use. And in this formula, what happens is that the entanglement entropy is still a function of what subregion you want to consider, but it's only a function of the state through this classical geometry. So this, I should say that everything I'm going to talk about today is in the strictly the classical limit, the large n limit of all of this. Okay, and so in this large n limit, it's really just a function of this geometry here. It's only a function of the state through this geometry. And the formula, right, is this RT formula. I'm not going to write the whole covariant version, but it's something like this, right? Okay. Okay, and exactly. And so there's certain constraints on what kind of entanglements you can get due to the fact that there is this RT formula here, right? So in addition to whatever constraints you might normally have in information theory. And I mean, people have thought about these kinds of constraints before. So there's this, for example, the entropy cone. I forgot to write down the authors of this paper, sorry. Which the idea here was basically to use the sort of Hedrick Takayanagi argument for strong subadditivity, right? Where you have, if you think of some boundary down here with some minimal surfaces coming up, where you have some region A, B, and C here. If you take this region S, A, B, what's S, B, C, you take these two surfaces, you cut them here, right, and you deform them down, you know that this is greater than S, B plus S, A, B, C. Right? So in this paper, they sort of took this constraint that you know that, due to the fact that there's some bulk surfaces there and came up with some nice story about what kind of constraints you can get out of this. Another example of this sort of idea of finding constraints on holographic entanglement functions is some work I did with Mark van Ramsdonk and Jihoon Lee and Matt Beach at UBC, where we looked at the fact that the basic idea was that this classical geometry should be set by the equations of motions and whatever boundary conditions you impose on it. Those boundary conditions were just in holography are related to sort of the one-point functions of in the boundary theory. And so you could express this entanglement entropy really as just some function of these one-point functions of single trace operators in holographic theory. And that gave you some specific structure for entanglement entropy. So that's sort of just previous examples in this idea. And so what I want to think about now, where does this go? Okay. So let me see. Okay. So I want to think of another constraint, okay? And so the sort of thing I'm proposing is that if you have some subset of the region, so this entanglement tree was a function of that region A, and I want to argue that, you know, even if you don't have access to every single region A, you can still reconstruct all the entanglement entropy function, okay? So I can write this in some way. Okay, let me just write down some sort of math way of saying this, right? So so I have entanglement entropy is a function on, let's say, something I'll call P of the, so this is basically all subsets of the boundary of this spacetime manifold, right? Of del M. Okay, so this is like the power set if you want, that's why I call it P. And so you can think of, okay, so entanglement entropy is really a function from these subsets to numbers, right? But maybe there's some subset of all of these things here, right, that I can call R, like the ones I need to reconstruct that are sufficient to fix S, right? So maybe if you know S on this subset, that's sufficient to fix, you know, the S on the whole function S here, right? And okay, and so the logic here, right, is there's maybe there's some subset of the boundary regions you need to be able to reconstruct all bulk bulk services. Okay, and okay, is that making sense? And you think, okay, you know, is this even a constraint? So like, is, you know, R just equal to P? Okay, and I mean, I haven't figured all this theory out, so I don't have I'll talk about some cases and stuff later. But from the beginning, you might think that maybe there is some redundancy here, just from a sort of argument like if you think of some region in the bulk. Okay, I have some little area here. There's lots of minimal surfaces that'll pass through this little region, right? And in fact, there's minimal surfaces that'll pass through it that look quite different, you know, as you get further away from it. And so these ones all know about this same little bit of geometry there. And so there must be some redundancy in the areas of these final things. So they all have the same information contained in them. That's sort of a heuristic argument of why you think there's maybe something here. I mean, I can draw a better drawing maybe where, you could have something like some surface that's like some long surface. If the boundary is down here, yeah, this is where my drawing skills potentially become an issue. But okay, if I have some surface that goes kind of out into the bulk like this, right? Okay, I could have some sort of other surface which is tangent to it somewhere here, right? That goes down maybe as like some, but that has some curve to it, right? So I have some sort of thing here, maybe this tangent at the same point here. Okay, and those sort of could be very different further away, but you know, near that point they could be tangent and be picking up the same volume element. Okay, so that was some sort of explanation of one reason I think that it's interesting to think about reconstructing bulk surfaces. I mean, also maybe you just wanna know how to reconstruct bulk surfaces in holography. Okay, right, so just to remind you a bit of the setup, right, is like, if you have some ADS space that you can draw something like this, right? And I have only access to data on the boundary here, and I have some sort of surface in the bulk. Maybe I just want to know, you know, what is the area of that surface? How do you interpret that in terms of a CFT quantity, a boundary quantity, right? Like, is there some interpretation of this surface in terms of like some observers that have finite, you know, access only to finite times on the boundary? There's been previous discussions of this kind of thing. So I think there's a few different reasons why you might want to think about reconstructing bulk surfaces, and there's a couple of them. Okay. So, okay, is that any questions so far? Response? Okay. Right. Okay. So in two dimensions, I'll start there. This sort of story is understood basically, right? So in this case, the set of all the sort of regions we want to think about. Like I call it all subsets. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it should be some sort of thing that we can measure the area of, I guess, if you're going to be a mathematician. But, yeah.
Are you restricting to a time slice or not?
Okay, so mostly I'm going to be restricting to a time slice. Just for convenience, basically, because it's a bit easier to think about. But I think a lot of this can be done not in a time sense as well, right? I mean,
and empty ADS.
So I don't want to restrict to empty ADS. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So yeah, part of the thing. Yeah, so the goal is going to be all to do stuff not in empty ADS. The places where I have like explicit calculations are mostly in empty ADS. But I want to use things that don't rely on the symmetry or some thing, right? So that you can hope that. So like for example, this differential entropy formula, right, works away from ADS because it doesn't. Yeah. Okay. So let's keep going a bit here. So if we have this sort of set of subsets in two dimensions, right? So let's talk about now a spatial slice of this. So that's like ADS 3, right? The spatial slice is just a two-dimensional hyperbolic space, and the boundary is just R, right? Okay, and so these things is basically unions of intervals, right? Right. But then in holography, all you're going to need is the individual intervals, right? Like connected, whatever you want to call it, intervals, right? And so, for example, if you have here, I'm drawing the Poincaré disk, right? And I have some region like A, okay, which is disconnected like that. In holography, right, you could even have like some black hole in the middle. Then the area the entanglement entropy of this region is given either by those two surfaces or by, you know, those surfaces plus something that wraps the black hole. And if I include the whole boundary as one of my connected intervals, you know, the entanglement entropy on these guys was enough to reconstruct that, right, by just taking minimums and stuff. So that's a familiar statement, I think. And for example, this is like the check that when people do this like Hardman or Fitzpatrick sort of way of doing 1/c calculations of doing some 1/c expansion of entanglement entropy in CFT2, and they were able to match like the two interval case to the holography, right? This is the non-trivial sort of constraint that they're matching, right? Okay, and just to keep talking here about two dimensions for a bit because it'll be useful for later. There is a formula as well for reconstructing non-extremal or sort of bulk surfaces, right? So I have my boundary down here, okay, and I have some surface in the bulk I want to reconstruct, right? Then there's differential entropy formula. Okay, it tells us what we should do is just take some surfaces which are tangent to the bulk surface, right? That one's tangent right there. There's some other one over here that's tangent there, right? And so yeah, I'm thinking of this bulk surface, let's say as parametrized by, you know, its position x and some z coordinate, right? So z is like the bulk direction and x is the boundary direction. Okay, right? And so the way that this differential entropy formula works, I should have started a new section here. Okay, is you have some sort of, okay, so you have this curve in the bulk. You have this one parameter family of intervals now. You could, you know, parameterize them by x naught and r. Okay, that's like some one parameter family of intervals, ix. And then the way you think of this is you can discretize that in the area of our curve, you know, gamma in the bulk that we want to reconstruct is, right, this thing here. Oh crap, I didn't put myself in the room. All right. Okay. Yeah, and the logic here of what we're doing, right, is that basically, we have these two nearby minimal surfaces, okay, in our one parameter family. And then what we're going to do is just subtract off the minimal surface that goes in here, okay, which is this intersection, right? And what that's going to do is basically cancel off all these bits here, right, and leave us with only this envelope here, okay? And so if we have some section of our surface, right, we have some bulk surface, right? And what we're doing is we're putting a whole bunch of little intervals, and so if you think of only some section of it, you're gonna have some sort of tails coming down with the final extremal surface here, right? If you think of only a closed curve in this formula, right? The boundary's over here, okay? Okay, and if we just look at this formula here, we have some intervals. Okay, I should have kept that other drawing maybe, but we have some two intervals. This is, we can parameterize them by the left endpoint u and the right endpoint v. That's like un. I'm gonna call it vn minus one vn. Okay, right, and then s of u, yeah. Right, this guy here that was the intersection is this one in the middle here. So that's just S of un vn minus one. So I'm just going through this because it's gonna be useful for our later, when we go to higher dimensions, how we're gonna do this. And that guy we can write as this sin. And then we're gonna Taylor expand it around this point here, right? And what we're gonna get is, yeah, the final answer is gonna be minus, right? Plus, yeah, okay, dvs times, right? That's just some Taylor expansion around here. And then we plug that back in there, and what we find is the area of gamma, where this is the whole gamma here, right, is some boundary terms plus some now integral of this minus s dv dv, right? Because I've taken these, I have this sum, I take these small, right? This becomes some delta v, and then I turn it into an integral, integral dv, right? Okay, so that's the review of how things work in two dimensions. So if I want to reconstruct an arbitrary bulk surface, okay, well, these ones I've reconstructed sort of envelopes. And that's mostly, so I'm thinking of envelopes of a bunch of these kind of minimal surfaces, right? So one parameter family of them. And yeah, so I can reconstruct envelopes. So I want to do things that are, you know, other surfaces. It's a bit more complicated, but I won't go into that now. Okay, and so the question now is, how do we generalize this to higher dimensions, right? So this worked in two dimensions. Let's see if we can write it in higher dimensions. Okay, so is that clear so far? Okay, cooler. People are already familiar with this stuff, bored with the review. Okay, so the goal, yeah, so let's try and do this in higher dimensions. We want to think about a spatial slice of ABS E plus one. Okay, think of a spatial slice that's like d-dimensional hyperbolic space. Okay, and the first idea maybe, right, is to look at this formula here. We have some integral of SDV. So maybe what we should do is just replace it by some sort of integrals, some sort of derivatives of the entanglement entropy here. And right, the important point is this entanglement entropy is just the entanglement entropy of these connected intervals, right? Okay, so yeah, I skipped a step there, sorry. Yeah, and so, yeah, maybe the first guess is that what we should do is just think, okay, the space of intervals that we had here, right? It has sort of this natural generalization that some you know, people talked about, this sort of space of causal diamonds, or when you look at spatial slices, maybe the, you know, the thing we should generalize this to is a space of balls, all right, curly B, for the space of balls in D dimensions, right? Which we know is something to do with this hitter D, right? And so maybe the first guess is, okay, let's just take this function, and then at higher dimensions, all we have to do is think of this as a function in B and take some extra derivatives of it, right? And what derivatives should we take? Okay? And then what we have to do is, okay, take this, and here the integral, so this thing here was just some particular derivative, some particular function in the space of balls, and we had to integrate it over some region here, which I don't know, call it B or something. And that region here that we integrated over depended on what bulk, you know, curve we want to do. And so maybe we have some integral over some, you know, region of balls over whatever region we need to do, right? Okay. And okay, let me just make sure I'm saying this right. Okay. And so that maybe is our first guess, right? So we should find some, so what is this thing here? There's some integral one in the space of balls. And so we should think of this as some sort of D minus one form. Okay. Right, in on this space of balls that we should integrate. And we just want to find the D minus one form, which whenever we integrate over the appropriate region gives us the area of a curve up to a boundary term. Okay, and unfortunately, that's not possible. So there's no such D minus one form where that's going to work. Okay, so I just want to get that out of the way first to make sure that we...
In D equals to two, like this form,
so it worked, right? Yeah, like so there's some coincidence.
Second derivative of the non-entity with respect to both endpoints, right? And you integrate it over the part of the city, right?
No, so here this is, so this is the form, right? In D equals two, this is a one form in this space of balls, right? And that's the form we have to integrate, and the region we have to integrate over is the ones, you know, the tangent sort of.
No, but you said that like you want to integrate over part of the city, so I will say that in D equals to two, the visitor appears like you take like one more derivative.
No, I mean the space you're already integrating over.
Let's see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're already. I mean, this is already a function on the balls, right? On intervals. So in D equals two, it's the balls. And so this is actually just a form on this space BD. The metric doesn't enter anywhere, I agree, right? And it won't really enter in my story. I just, you know, I wanted to just make a connection that this is that space you were talking about. Okay.
Are you gonna comment on your claim with
this? Yeah, I'm gonna prove it now. Yeah, so I'm gonna write it down more precisely what I'm saying and then I'll prove it. And then okay, and so before you despair and give up hope, I am gonna make a proposal afterwards for what I think is the right thing to do. But just before we do something more complicated, I think it's important just to understand like why didn't this work and you know what worked in lower dimension, okay? So the sort of, okay, I don't know if I want to call it theorem, but maybe that's a bit bold, but okay, maybe claim. Okay, so I'm going to write something that, yeah, okay, that is false, I guess. But, okay, so given a geometry, okay, so like some asymptotically hyperbolic geometry, okay, is there a D minus one form, okay, that I'll call C for, you know, like Crofton potential or something, okay, that when integrated, okay, yeah, okay, let's see. Let's say this in a fancier way. So such that, like given bulk surface, you know, D minus one dimensional surface, right, N, you know, there exists like a region, what do I want to call it, like N, you know, in the space of balls or something. You know, such that the integral of C over this region and B is just the area of N plus maybe boundary terms. Right? So this is kind of the thing I was asking about, and the answer is gonna be no. Okay? Is that clear? That's kind of the higher dimensional version.
You're integrating in the space of balls over a codimension one surface?
Yeah, it's a codimension one surface in the space of balls. Yeah, NB is going to be right. I mean, if I have a codimension one thing, I need a codimension one form to integrate on it, right? And that's what the area is.
And if you don't consider codimension one, but codimension zero.
If I think of codimension zero, yeah, okay, so that's something we should talk about. So I think, okay, so if you want to think about codimension zero, then you can probably relate it to this ideas of Crofton forms, or sorry, like, yeah, Crofton forms, exactly right. But the thing is that sort of argument really, okay, I don't, in order to introduce the stuff for that is a bit more detailed, I guess, okay, I'm going to introduce something in a moment, a structure that'll allow me to talk more about that. But basically, it used the symmetries of ADS very importantly. And I guess I kind of want to try and avoid using the symmetries of ADS too much because I want to be able to use it away from ADS, the formula I'm going to come up with, right? But is it clear? I mean, this is the right sort of thing, right? Like, if I have some, you know, if I have some area, which is like a D minus one dimensional integral, I want to push that to like a D minus one dimensional integral on the boundary, right? So that's where all these like dimensions are coming out. Okay. And this bit here, I'm just saying, right, like that I'm allowed to, like this region here is allowed to depend on what bulk surface I'm thinking about, but this form isn't. That's the key thing, right? Okay, there should be a form that just works for everything, right? That was what happened in lower dimensions. Okay, and the way I want to think about this is going to be by introducing some auxiliary space here that, I mean, people have sort of essentially talked about it in the physics literature, but I don't think they sort of called it a bundle, which is kind of one way of thinking of it. And so there's some bundle E here, which I'm going to describe sort of three different coordinate systems on. And what is this bundle? It's just, if I think of the spatial slice of ADS, and I think of the normal vectors at a point, you know, so I have the points and I have the bundle of normal vectors over points, right? I can think of this, so there's one coordinate system on this bundle, which is like points in the bulk, xz, and I'll call z dot like some parameters which determine what way this unit vector is pointing, okay? That's the, that space is the same space as the space of, you know, ball-shaped regions on the boundary, right? And points picked on those ball-shaped surfaces, okay? So that's coordinates like x naught r, so here there's some, you know, there's, okay, I'll talk about the dimensionality in a second, okay? And you have to set some parameters to pick your point on that surface you're talking about, right? And there's also, you know, you can also think of this as specifying the center of your ball and the point in the bulk. So this thing is like x naught, xz, let's say, right? And this is, so this thing is like a, what is it? This is d minus 1d, yeah. It's 2d minus 1 dimensional, right? Okay, so I mean, you could call this like the normal bundle, or sort of like the unit vector bundle on, you know, your space time x or something. So this thing really makes sense in hyperbolic space, of course, right? Like the actual, I mean, between these. This thing is like the space of balls that I've introduced, right? Times like some sort of point, you know, maybe that's a d minus one sphere, right? Like the point that you want to pick on the surface. And this sort of is like, you know, a point in the bulk times like a point on the boundary. So, you know, locally that's what these look like, okay? And the point of introducing this space is that now the area of some surface, right? So if I have some surface N in the bulk, okay? And maybe I have, so I have some, let me see, let's erase this thing here. So I have some surface, you know, in the bulk here, and that's parameterized, let's say, by x and z of x. Okay, I can lift that to some surface. This is a d minus, you know, codimension one surface. I can lift that to some codimension one surface in this bundle by just taking, you know, x, z of x, and like diz, right, in here. And so that's just thinking like, think of all of the tangent surfaces to this bulk surface, right? That's what this surface I've talked about in Twiddle is, right? It's just all of these ones. So this is like exactly the kind of things that were involved in this differential entropy formula, okay? And then the nice thing about introducing this is that now the area of N, right? Okay? Normally that would be like N some induced volume element, you know, d sigma. And so there's all sorts of, there's like in some sort of implicit dependence on N in this G induced here. But it turns out in this space, you can just write this as the integral of A over N Twiddle, where A is some fixed form. Okay? And just to be clear here, what is A in D equals 2? I'll write it down explicitly because it's not too complicated. So, okay, actually, let's call this A, you know, D minus 1. It's a D minus 1 form. Okay? So A1 is just dx plus z dot dz over the squared, right? So if I plug in z of x, you know, into here, dz of x is just like, you know, dz by dx, dx. And then if you just, you know, if you plug that in, you'll see you've got the right thing, right? And so this is what you should do when you integrate a form along a curve, right? Is just plug in the appropriate, and you know, z dot I replace with this sort of thing. And I get the right length element, right? So this thing is just some form I integrate to get the areas of things in this high-dimensional space. And there's some formula in, you know, D dimensions you can just write for what this is. I won't write it here because it's a bit bigger. Okay, let me just make sure I'm okay, still making sense. Okay, is that clear? Now we can go back to what our claim was. Okay, so now our statement is that there should be some, region we should integrate some form, some d minus one form here over. Okay, and we want to be equal to the integral now over n twiddle of A. Okay, and now this C here was a form on the space of balls, but the space of balls is just, it's a base manifold of this bundle, so we can just think of any form in BD as some form in this bundle, right? It's just that it's independent of those sort of t coordinates. Okay, and then it's clear that what we need for this to be true is that C is equal to A up to a total derivative. Okay? And so in D equals 2, that was exactly the thing that was used to prove this differential entropy formula, right? So, it was sort of stated in terms of these manifold maybe or something, but I mean, this is the proof, right? And so the question is like, do you have a way of doing this in higher dimensions? Okay, and there's an easy way to check that you can't. All you have to do is take a D on both sides. Okay, and so if you think of, if you take a D of this thing, which was independent of any T's, it should still be independent of any of this sort of bundle, this fiber here of the bundle, right? It should only be, this should still be a sort of D form in the space of balls. And so just compute D of A and C, and then change coordinates. So I have some formula for A in these coordinates, right? You write it all out, you change coordinates into these coordinates, and you just check whether or not it's independent of T. And in D equals 2, it's exactly independent of T, right? And this was this Crofton form that we used. But in higher dimensions, it's just not independent of T. So if you just calculate dA, change coordinates to that, there's all sorts of dependence on where you are in the fiber, right? And so it just doesn't work, right? So the point here, right, is that the area is really just this integral here, okay? And so it's really this form that you're integrating over some region, okay? And that form just depends on where you are in the fiber here, so there can't be any sort of form that's only integrated over the space of balls. Okay? And so I guess I forgot to say at the beginning, so everything I talked about down here was in ADS, but I mean, if it's going to be true for any geometry, it better be true for ADS, and so this is a counterexample, basically, to the claim I wrote there. Okay? So, in particular, if you have any sort of thing that's just like some, derivatives of S by, I mean, this is stuff that, Vijay was talking about, like some volume or something here of the ball, or whatever sort of funny derivative you want to take, you want to take some whatever derivative of S, where S is some function on these balls, it's not going to work, right?
Is your fiber dependence there related or equivalent to the fact, like when I have curves and they cross, you can count how many crossings there are,
yeah.
But when surfaces cross, they cross on some?
Yeah, it's related, I think, yeah. So something in particular you can say there is that this Crofton formula that exists. So the point is that in ADS, this bundle has a sort of unique metric on it, specified by conformal symmetry. And so there's sort of some unique invariant metric that you can put on it. And then the point is that if you integrate out, like if you pick a point in the bulk and you integrate over all the unit vectors, that'll just give you a like factor of a volume of a sphere or something times the induced volume element at that point. And so integrating over surfaces and over all the fiber over that point on the surface is just a nice thing in this space, right? And then if you do this integral and then you try and push it over to the boundary, right? You know what the measure you have to use is, because there's a unique invariant measure, right? So if you move away from ADS, you're kind of screwed because you have no more unique invariant measure and you don't know how to push it to the boundary anymore. But for ADS, you know what to do here, and you have to integrate. It ends up being an integral in this space where you're integrating over a thing that's codimension in the fiber now, instead of codimension one in the fiber, instead of being codimension one in the base manifold. And so that's exactly this thing you're sort of mentioning, that the intersections now happen on some spheres in the bulk. And so you have to know about all the volumes of these spheres even to use this formula. So I think there is some nice, I think like in symmetric enough spaces, there is nice formulas where you can sort of know what these volumes of these spheres are and stuff. But I guess if you want to move away from ADS, that's not going to be a great approach, I think, because you're using the symmetry very intrinsically. But maybe there's something there. Yeah, I mean, that would be something to think more about, definitely. If you're interested in talking more about that, I've thought a bit about what this space is. So the point here, so it can't be that simple, and what we have to do is basically, so one way out of this would be to have some sort of implicit dependence on what service you're integrating over in this thing, but in a way like this induced volume, so this will give me some words that maybe won't make sense, but we can say them and then hopefully it'll motivate a bit. So this thing here has some implicit dependence on the surface, like the induced volume here, right? And so maybe there's some sort of thing that has implicit dependence on the surface, but it's in some way that's controllable and still, you can get access to only from having access to the boundary. That'll let us reconstruct the services. So, let's add a couple comments, make sure I got them all. And so you could do something, like you could use this sort of unique, volume element in this, like we're talking about the Crofton form, and then try and, do some induced thing. Like we have some codimension one space in the space of balls, which is like those ones which are tangent to the surface, and then you could try and find induced thing. But I think maybe that's not the best way of approaching it because, it's relying on symmetry. So what do we do? So my proposal is that we should, let me erase some or find some space to write. I guess over here it'll work. So I'm going to argue that the right guide to approaching this. Maybe I should mention that I worked with an undergrad at UBC, Jake Bian, that he was very into math and sort of introduced me a bit to these bundles and stuff. So I think that I should just mention his name. We had some good conversations about that stuff. So I'm gonna now say that, maybe the guide to going to higher dimensions is the thing that Mikhail pointed out to me that he uses as a guide in the original derivation of these formulas for differential entropy, is that we wanna cancel out the boundary the boundary divergences, right? So when we had a surface that was in the bulk, and then we had these caps off at the side, right? Because this is some envelope of a one parameter family of some, where we have some intervals like this, some minimal surfaces emanating from them, and then we have some one parameter family of them, and we think of this as an envelope of those, right? The thing which guided finding the right formula was that this thing should only have divergences coming from over here. It shouldn't have any divergences coming from the middle part, right? And so what you have to do is subtract off all of these, intersecting bits here, which cancels the divergences just down here. So if you look at this from the boundary, you have some region, and then you had some other intervals that you maybe had to insert, right? So you have some surface like that in the bulk, but then you had to subtract off, so you have like this interval and this interval, but then you had to subtract off this interval so that exactly, these divergences canceled. And now we're gonna try and do something similar in higher dimensions to come up with a formula that we can use. And so here, I'm gonna try and do some drawings here. This is where things maybe get a bit harder to draw. So I have some bulk surface. Here I'm going to have some sort of, so this is some two parameter family. This is some two dimensional surface. Maybe I'm in D equals, three now. I'm stepping up one dimension from the previous one. So I want to do some two dimensional surface in the bulk. I have some two parameter family of points on it, right? And the edge of it now, there's going to be some sort of tails that come down. Instead of just being these individual geodesics, they're going to be something which is localized all along this edge here, right? And I want to match those divergences. So if I start, So this thing is some two parameter family of balls, but I wanted to start with a one parameter family of balls. So the same sort of idea here with intervals, but just pushed up to a higher dimension just to get started and get our feet wet. Is it clear so far? You see where I'm going? So I have some coordinates on balls are like r, x naught, and y naught, let's say, in this one higher dimension. These are a function of some alpha, let's say, right? And then what I'm thinking is the envelope of some set of balls like this, right? So in the bulk, this is like some sort of, draw big enough. Some sort of thing like, you know, where you have a sort of worm-shaped thing, if you want, right, like that. Right? Is that clear what I'm drawing? Okay. And so that's like the envelope of these balls. And I want to say, okay, so what do I do? If I look at this from above, this is a bunch of sort of circles where I've discretized now, right? So this is alpha is running this way, but I've discretized it to like alpha 1, alpha 2, okay? And I'm going to do the same sort of thing we did there to find what the formula is. Now, if I look at two neighboring balls, what is this? This is some ball there and some ball there, okay? And what do I want to do? I want to cancel off exactly these divergences here. Okay, and so what I should just write is, oh, this one doesn't go up, oh. Okay, the area of that worm, okay, is some boundary term, okay, but yeah, the boundary term is actually gonna be S of this first ball, and then I'm gonna do the same thing as in basically lower dimension. Take the ball and then subtract the intersection of those balls, right? Okay, but now we have to figure out what is this intersection of these balls? Is this any sort of nice shape, right? Well, this is actually, so when these balls get really close together, this is exactly just this slight deformation of some ball, right? So if I think of the right circle here, right? And then I have the circle that I moved over just a little bit to the left, right? This is just a deformation of this one where I've moved things in a little bit over here, okay? And then kept it fixed over on this side. Over here, right? Okay, let me write this explicitly now, okay? Yeah, so, okay, let me write some formulas now. So, now I wanna think of, okay, so in what follows, just to be clear, I'm thinking of entanglement of some region, okay? I'm gonna write this in some sort of polar coordinates, right? Where there's some r here, and there's some angle theta here, right? And the point is that this region A, you know, its boundary, is just some function r of theta that specifies the function, right? So this is some, you know, the entanglement entropy is some functional of this r of theta, right? Where that's how you specify what region you're talking about. And so if I have some ball n, you know, some arbitrary ball, this thing is related to some function r of theta, which is parameterized by the parameters of the ball, right? In particular, like r of theta, if you know, x naught and y naught are just at the center of space, and I'm at some radius r, that is just r, right? Is that clear what I'm saying, what I'm talking about here? Okay, then, okay, I need some more, I'm gonna start erasing at some point here, unfortunately. Yeah, let me put that, all right. Okay, so then what is this thing here, right? So if I have, B, okay, that thing's related to, well, on this part here, it's just this original one, right? And on this one here, it's just the radius of that ball that was moved to the left of it. All right, is that clear? And so I'm gonna write it as this function here for, you know, the nth ball, okay, plus some delta r. Okay, and what is delta r? Okay, well, it's just zero. If I call this point here theta naught, right, so the angle around to there theta naught, it's just zero for thetas greater than theta naught. And it's basically, right, it's like this, the one for the nth ball minus the one for the, you know, n minus one ball, which is just some derivative, right? We can Taylor expand that out. And that'll be like dr by dx naught, you know, of theta times like x naught of n minus x naught of n minus 1. I guess there's a minus here. And then you can Taylor expand these as well and write that as like dx naught by d alpha times, you know, delta alpha. Okay, and there's also the chain rule, right, tells us there's also one where you take dr by d, this r parameter, right, the radius of the ball, and there'll be some dr by d alpha, delta alpha. Okay, and there's also a thing where you have a y naught derivative, right? Okay, and so I'm gonna call this thing where I've pulled out the delta alpha, I'll call that delta alpha r times some delta alpha, right? So this is a little perturbation when you move the ball a little bit along your one parameter family. And I just want to work this all out carefully to make it clear that there's sort of a nice answer here, that, that this thing, you know, means something and has some just nice formula for it. So now if I write, you know, S of this intersection of balls, okay, what is that? Well, it was just this original one, plus now I'm going to do some functional derivative, right? I have to put this delta. Okay, is that clear? So I've just tailor expanded things to linear order here. All right, and I can plug back into this ball here, this formula here, and then take all my, you know, take my sums, take these to be small, and they just become a d alpha. And this formula just becomes some boundary term plus the integral ds by dr of theta, delta alpha r of theta, d alpha d theta. Okay?
This is the basic idea here, is that previously the intersection of two intervals was an interval as well. And now like the intersection is going to be treated as some form of sphere.
Exactly.
You still want to use the, I mean, you want to make use of the fact that you are close to this chain is close to the sphere.
Yeah.
And not
exactly.
To interpret it in some different way. That's
big. Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly the idea, right? So now we have some formula where all we had to take was some shape derivative, right? And so going back to my original question of what's the basis of information we're going to need, well, it's going to be something like, you know, I haven't gotten to the higher, you know, to the full case yet, but to give you a preview, it's going to be these shape derivatives around the balls, right? And so it's not just any shape we need, it's just the ones that are very near balls, right? And taking derivatives of that. And so it's some sort of, you know, some amount of functions on this space of balls, right? So this is some very explicit formula, and I haven't proven that this is area to you yet or anything, right? All I've shown is that these have the same divergences, basically. Okay?
So did you show me that? I mean,
okay,
maybe
yeah.
This is a technical thing for later.
Sure, yeah.
When you form this new shape,
yeah,
you introduce new kinds of...
Because of the corners? Yeah. So in the two-parameter thing, the corners actually all exactly cancel. In this thing, that is a little bit funny, right? I think so.
Let's get you worried about what's happening.
Well, there'll be corners. Yeah.
The point was to cancel divergences.
Yeah. So I mean, I think in the limit where, in the limit of the balls getting close together.
Yeah.
Right, then the envelope doesn't have these corners in it, right? Like the envelope is just flat. Mm-hmm. And then, it seems like it would be okay. So maybe the way I'm understanding this is now this thing is kind of, you know, once you think of this thing, right? What is kind of the region of like B minus intersection? It's kind of this region like that minus this region where you have this thing inside here. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you have to figure out like what order in this expansion are these like corner terms, and they might be like a higher order in this like alpha parameter, for example. I'm not sure exactly, I haven't worked that out, but I mean, the thing I have worked out is that, like for example, ADS, if you just explicitly calculate this, you can just see, you know, explicitly what this boundary term is and that it's equal to the worm. So for ADS, it just works. And I think for arbitrary geometries, it's basically, here we're just taking one shape derivative, and so it's still basically the argument that worked to prove this sort of thing just still works. It's just, it's going to give you like areas of strips that you're integrating up instead of areas, you know, area elements at a point. So I think this formula just works here. But yeah, there's probably some little subtleties to think about these corner terms here. But okay. Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, let's just.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. We should talk about that some more though. Yeah. That's good. Good point. Okay, so let's go to the two parameter family of services now. Okay, unfortunately now I have to erase, I think. It's the best one to erase. Let's go over here. Is there a big eraser? Let's use this guy. Okay. Now, okay, so let's just get to the point here because we have not so much time left. So how do we do this in higher dimensions? No, that's the wrong notes. Okay, now I want to think of a two-parameter family. So I have this service in the bulk, right? I have some two-parameter family of you know, services which are tangent to it, right? They're going down to the boundary over here. Okay, I think, is the setup clear? So if you think of all of these now, viewed from above, looking at just the where they touch the boundary, right? What you get is some sort of, you know, two-parameter family of these balls on the boundary, right? So you have some grid of them or something if you discretize, right? And now I can, let's just parameterize by the x and y of the point where it's tangent on the surface here.
So now we're in ADS back.
No, now we're in, yeah, we're in ADS. Four, but this is the actual codimension one service that we wanted, or codimension two service that we wanted from the beginning, right? So that was kind of the warm-up problem. And now we're gonna see how do we cancel these guys, right? And so what you get is you have some, okay, this is where the drawings get a bit tricky, so I'll try and be precise, but excuse me if it doesn't work out. Okay, maybe that'll be okay, all right. Now what do you want to do? Okay, so we have, this is sort of four representative circles here, right? Okay, it's a little bit hard to draw on the board, but I mean, okay, I've thought about this a bunch, so I think it all works. So if we think of just two next door ones, right, what we should do again is subtract this sort of thing in here, right? All right, so now we can do that for all the neighboring ones. So we have this one and this one, there's some neighboring one here, right, we should subtract. Okay, this one and this one, there's this one that we should subtract. I'll use different colors for each of them. Sorts of colors. Okay, do I have more colors? This one and this one, we should subtract this thing. Okay, and then one more color. This one and this one, we should subtract this thing. Okay, and what we notice is that we've canceled off all of the interior lines perfectly. Okay, except that we canceled out this part here twice. And so we have to add back in this part in the middle. Okay, and that looks like some little triangle thing that's tiny and weird, but if you actually take the limit where all these circles are close together, this is again just some sort of thing that looks near a circle, right? And what it is just the intersection of all four of these balls. Okay, so the structure we want to do is something like, now we have two parameter family of balls, right? Okay, we want to subtract off the ones where we take that ball, and then we do the one, you know, one to the left, let's say. Okay, minus the one, you know, one to the right. Okay, I'm just being a little bit schematic here, because we don't have tons of time left. And then we want to add back on the one where we're intersecting, you know, like four of these balls. But with the one all the way there. And that's exactly canceled out all of the stuff inside, right? So if you just look at this now, once we've done all of this stuff, what we end up with is exactly this thing with these four lobes like this, okay? And yeah, and here, okay, so I'll comment about corner stuff later, but there's some, I think in this case you can understand that there's no corner, extra corner divergences. And so, okay.
Does this expression, is this a positive definite?
Well, let me write what it is. Yeah. So this thing, okay, so what is that thing? Okay, where should I go next? Let's erase something over here, maybe. Yeah, let's erase here. Okay, so this thing, okay, we can do, I won't write out exactly all the nice expansion there, okay, but just do exactly the same sort of thing we did for the one parameter family case, and be careful about, you know, keeping track of everything, and just tailor expand things out and get, you know, what the terms are. And what you find is that linear order everything cancels, and what you get is this thing goes to some integral now of the second order shape derivative, where we have two derivatives, right? Okay, we have our integration over our two parameters, we have our integration over our two dummy variables for these things, right? Is that Yeah, if the four parameters here are integrals is a bit confusing, just ask me. But okay, and what do we get? Well, we get the thing where we had, okay, so, yeah, okay, this is the part that maybe I need to draw a bit more, but, okay, what we get is just the thing where we move the ball a bit to the left, okay, and the thing where we move the ball a bit to the bottom, down. And the point is that this ball here, right, which is like this edge here that we're sort of getting on this one, is exactly the one where we've sort of moved it down one plus left one, right? And so this came from just some Taylor expansion of something like f of like x naught plus delta x, sorry, like f naught minus, right? Right? So if you Taylor expand this out, what you'll get is like, you know, if it was a vector quantity, you'd have a sum over ij, df by xi, xj, you know, delta xi, delta yj, right? Using the symmetry of the partial derivative. Okay, so that's what I did there, right? I just did that all out, and then the fact that this ball down here is just the one that shifted down and left, okay? And this is the formula you get. And so this thing is equal, supposed to be equal to the area of the envelope, right, plus some boundary terms, okay? And so this thing is not like some, you know, overly obtuse formula. This thing is, you know, there's like this Mézé formula that lets you calculate what this is, right? And as you ask this thing, this Mézé formula is positive definite, right? Mm-hmm. And then these you just calculate by knowing, you know, if you know R as a function of, you know, these parameters, and you know X naught as a function of these parameters and everything, right? Then you just can compute what these are by moving balls around and being careful about looking at overlaps and everything, right? And you just get some very explicit formula. And so for ADS, you can write out what that explicit formula is. It's just that unfortunately it's fairly complicated, so I haven't figured out yet what the boundary term you have to add is to make it look exactly equal to the area. So I haven't proven that this is equal to the area yet, but I have some numerical evidence that it works. And I think, you know, this is, at the very least, this is something that's like localizing itself. You know, if you think of some periodic now thing where everything, all the boundary terms cancel off at infinity, I mean, in the bulk, this is something that's like localizing near the surface. So I mean, it has to do something to do with this bulk surface, right? So I think, okay, so this is the quantity I'm proposing here. Okay, in higher dimensions, what I think you have to do is take, you know, a d minus one shape derivative, right? Because now as you keep getting more dimensions, you keep having to add more and more balls and canceling more and more differences off. And so you get some d minus one shape derivative with all these delta r's and stuff, right? And so, you know, how do you calculate what that is? It's a bit trickier, but I think in holography, there's some, you know, basically you think of it as some ball and there's some function z of all the x's, you know, and you're basically doing little perturbations at the side. So this is like some sort of Green's function thing you're calculating. There should be some way of computing, you know, in some perturbation theory what this is. You know, you have to figure out what the vertices you want to put and then do some diagrams and stuff. I think there's some way of setting up a theory to do that. But I think first of all, the thing to do is just look at this sort of lower dimensional formula and understand it well. And because there we have, you know, everything is very explicit what that is, right? So I had a couple of comments. Let me just make sure I hit them all. Yeah, and I mean, the thing here is we didn't use like symmetries or something, right? I mean, this thing's like, so I haven't proven this. So the one parameter family one, I think the same arguments go through in arbitrary, you know, asymptotically ADS spacetimes or like, you know, with spatial slices, of course. But this one, I mean, it didn't really use the symmetries or anything. So there's good hope that it'll work in other geometries. Yeah, okay, so that's where I want to get to. So just a quick summary of what I talked about. So I wanted to understand, or the way I initially motivated this, right, was that there's some subset of all regions that is the actual sort of basic information you need to be able to reconstruct all the geometry through entanglement, or, you know, and then once you have that geometry, you can reconstruct all the other entanglement entropies. And so I'm trying to understand what that basic subset is. And what I'm arguing here is that subset is exactly just, you know, you need to know entanglement entropy of some things which are near balls, and you need some sort of, you know, d minus one shape derivatives of the entanglement entropy of these around these ball shapes, right? And so this is some subset of all that information. And then, you know, in particular, like if you wanted to find minimal surfaces on other shapes, okay, you could set this up as some sort of problem in this space of, you know, now we have this like R parameterized, let's say, by X naught, Y naught. You have some sort of functional integral over what those are. I think there's, I haven't, you know, had much chance to think about this yet, but I think there's some subtleties there that need to be worked out. But you know, you could pose some sort of minimization problem for some other area, which is like some functional of like R as a function of X naught, Y naught, you know, and then you have some like derivatives. Okay, that's like the kind of things that enter in this formula here. And set yourself up some minimization problem like this, and then try and understand that. You know, you figure out the boundary conditions on that, but there you go. So I think this is a new approach to doing reconstruction of bulk surfaces, and thanks for coming along on the ride with me. Sorry, I went a bit over.
Well, with not less time to Charles again, like I just want to remark that Charles is with us around 15 minutes.